Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. It's great to have you here on this Saturday and every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, streaming live on the internet at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We archive our programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We are also rebroadcast Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific time on a2zen.fm. And that is the letter A, the number 2, ZEN.FM. And you can listen to the program there on Sunday, again, at 3 p.m. Pacific time. And we enjoy coming to you every Saturday and providing the archives and all the information about our guests, websites, information that we want you to check out. We don't necessarily agree with every little thing that our guests say, but we are here to provide that information so that you can make an informed decision. That's really what it's about. I'm just presenting the information. My guests are just presenting the information. We're not making up your mind. I know that there's a particular network that likes to do that for you. Actually, there are a lot of them. We aren't part of that. We believe in free thinking. Free believing, as a matter of fact. You can believe whatever you want, that the sky is purple. And if that's what you believe, hey, all power, more power to... Actually, a purple sky would actually look kind of cool. Needless to say, the jocularity and frivolity that's going to go on in this program today is pursuant to just getting this interview underway because of the time that we scheduled to talk. My guest is Catherine Grant. She is the Enneagram master, if you will. She teaches and facilitates Enneagram and we're going to find out what that is all about. And Catherine, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program today.
Well, thank you, Richard. It's really a pleasure to be here.
You are here as we are speaking to present a day-long workshop on Enneagrams and having people learn about them. And at the time of this interview, you have already presented the workshop and have moved on to another town, but it's something that you've been doing for how long? When did you get involved with Enneagrams?
I first started studying the Enneagram in 1994 and started teaching way too soon, as most of us do, and then became certified and began taking other workshops and classes and instruction with the real masters. So I do retreats and classes of different kinds. I come to Santa Barbara usually about once a quarter to do a full-day program. Mm-hmm. So I would love to have people get on my email list or write to me, and I can add them, let them know when the next time is that I'm in Santa Barbara, see if they're interested.
Is this something that you've always been interested in? I mean, what was it that piqued your... Because there are all kinds of tests to seek out and find who and what we are all about and what our blocks are and our issues and how to work. I mean, I went through LifeSpring, which was sort of like EST. And I've been through Omega Vector and Delta Vector back in Phoenix. And I've done some counseling. I've been to therapy, folks. That is true. So consider the source when you're listening to this program. You get my point?
I do. I mean,
there are those who would say, you know, we're all whacked out. Okay? We're all crazy.
Well, the thing that I like about the Enneagram is that it really is a self-study and a self-discovery. There are lots of books that are written about the Enneagram in various ways and applications of the information. But ultimately, it is up to the person to determine what their Enneagram type is. And then the fun thing about the Enneagram is it gives you a path out of your stuckness. It comes with a diagram. What am I missing? What can I look at? What are my other potentials? Where are my other strengths? So it's not just a diagnostic tool that says, yes, you're a little bit crazy, but it says, here's how you can move from where you are to a more whole place. And I find that intriguing. When I first learned about it, that was what hit me. Is that it's powerful in that what it tells you about yourself, but the second half of it is it helps you move. There's always movement in the model.
Let me ask you to better define what an Enneagram is. It sounds to me like it's some type of chart or graph. You know, I will take a test of sorts.
Well, the Enneagram,
like an IQ of sorts.
Right. The Enneagram. Ennea means nine in Greek, and there are nine points on a circle. It is an ancient diagram. It was found, 2,600 years ago or so. Occasionally it pops up. But the real modern psychology that's been put on it is only since about 1970. There's kind of a shady history before that time. Each style has strengths and essential nature, giftedness, that those people who inhabit that place on this model have kind of an abundance. We can all access everything, but that takes a pretty enlightened person. Might as well just access what you're really good at first,
okay,
and then start looking around at what the other potentials are.
Okay, so I want to break through the barriers.
Okay.
Of the blocks that I've been carrying on in my life for potentially 50 plus years. I'll be 52 in June. So, because they're holding me, I'm aware to a certain level that they're holding me back from really accomplishing the things that I want to accomplish.
Right.
From going in the direction that I really would like to go, in spite of the fact that I feel very comfortable in the path that I'm on. And then again, I'm using myself as an example, but in a generic way, there's somebody listening saying the same kind of thing. Look, I know that I'm doing my life's purpose. I know I'm going in the right direction.
Right.
And I really would like to be doing more. And I really feel that I should be doing more. But it's like there's this one hump or hill or mountain I just can't seem to get over. And I'm not sure what it is. And I need to find out what it is so that I can, you know, vaporize the mountain and move on through, or leave the mountain alone and climb over it.
Yeah, that might be more effective.
Okay. Well, you do realize that the concept of a man who has enough faith as a grain of mustard seed can move mountains. So
that's
I'm thinking,
right.
Okay.
That's right. That slipped there for a moment.
Okay.
The first step when studying the Enneagram is to begin to self-identify which of these areas is mine. Now, when I teach, I talk about the highest aspects of each of the nine styles. And they're things that we're pretty familiar with. Peace, power, love, goodness, wisdom, you know, cool things like that. Well, most of us do not identify ourselves as truly a peaceful person or truly a courageous person. So in the process, we talk about how we are defended, what our motivations are, how we've actually gotten kind of twisted and screwed up. When we were tiny, when we were little tiny children, it worked then. So if we can start to look at those things, we can start to loosen the grip. Like you say, get out of the routine, get out of the rut, mm-hmm. learn a different pattern. So it's a little bit of looking at our behaviors to identify what's underneath them. The Enneagram is not a behavioral model. It's a motivational model, spiritual and psychological. So it takes some work. It's not, you know, a two-hour deal and you know your type and so you're all better. But there's a lot of things that go around each type. For instance, myself, I'm a seven. Mm-hmm. We always use shorthand by identifying the numbers. It just makes it easier. And my essential nature is one of joyfulness and vision.
Okay.
Well, I accept that. But there's also all kinds of defenses that I have and blocks that I have. And now that I'm more aware of those, I can notice sooner when I'm getting back into the old patterns and perhaps actually try something a little different so that I'm moving more from my essential nature than my garbaged up nature.
I've noticed in my relationship with my wife, we've been together for more than 10 years, celebrating our 10th anniversary in December of this year, ironically on the 21st. And I was funny, too, because Greg Braden, a guest who's been on this program, made the comment when I revealed that. He says, that's what the Mayans were writing about, that you get it right on your 10th anniversary. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if you don't, it's all over for all of us. So I've got a lot of pressure come the 21st
that's
of
right.
December.
Well, we're holding you to that.
But in relating to my wife, there would be times when we would just be conversing and sharing information or instruction of this nature. And I would reply in such a way that sort of upset her, as if she was getting that I was angry because my tone would go up. So over the course of time, I've noticed that when I feel like raising the tone, I'm conscious that, okay, don't raise the tone. Keep it even here, just like what you were talking back there. You know, you don't need to raise your tone, especially with her, not just because she's sensitive to that, but maybe other people pick up on that too. So you're just giving information. You're not trying to instruct people or scold them. You're just giving information. So just relax. So I've actually become more conscious of dropping the tone down.
Yeah.
Is that the kind of thing that the Enneagram may or can reveal?
Well, I think that that's...
maybe not a specific, but anyway.
Yeah, certainly a piece of it. I think if you can envision a circle, which isn't really a hard diagram to envision.
Not too hard. I'm looking at
it. And you're standing on that circle looking towards the inside.
Okay.
Okay.
Standing on the outer...
Right,
on the
outer rim. Now, I'm also doing that, but I'm standing in a very different place.
Right.
We could actually be almost directly opposite from each other. You look at the world and see an entirely different scene or different worldview than I do. So we all think we have the truth, and what we have is 1/9 of it. People come at things from totally different perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are more driven by their head information, others by their heart information, and others by their gut information. And as a head person, when somebody wants to get too feely, until I understood that that doesn't mean they're crazy, that just means they're a different Enneagram type, it broke down communication. So there can be a great deal of awareness that the other person is coming at this from a different direction and still has a great deal of truth to bring to the situation.
There are 9 Enneagram types?
Yes.
9 points on the circle?
Yes.
That analogy is the very one that I use for this program. The whole point of this program is to bring people to the circle and move around it. Stand at a different point. There's an event going on in the center of the circle. And when you stand in one spot, you get one point of view. You stand in another spot, you get a different perspective, a different understanding. I mean, and we've seen time after time, on all the different levels, both personal all the way up to global, where people will make literally an assumption based upon the limited information that they have been given about that event, when in fact you wait a day, a week, a month, a year, more information has now come in about that event, and now you have to change your understanding, let alone opinion, of that event.
Right. Well, and one of the beauties of the Enneagram is not only is it a circular, but it has lines that go across the diagram as well. So you really have a kind of a built-in connection to points of view that are on other sides of the circle. So if you would access that, once you kind of know about that, there are some real skills and some really powerful things that you can access very naturally. They are part of who and how you are. So if you, for instance, myself as a 7, I tend to be a little scattered. Well, that was like 10 years ago. Now I'm not. But one of the things that I'm, the styles I'm connected to by a connecting line is a style that's very good at detail and perfection and getting things done and being on time and all that kind of thing. So if I can relax and say, I can do that too. I can make a detailed list. I can set the goals. But if I get like more wound up rather than relaxing and noticing what skills I need, then I get worse in a way. I know that sounds kind of...
We sort of tend to get in our own way.
Yeah, we do.
Because of those attributes.
Right. And being shown the map, saying, go here, look at this, look sideways, see what else.
And in not an effort to here to be politically correct or anything, but there's nothing good or bad about these attributes, as
That's
I've
right.
kind of given them.
That's right.
It's just, it's the way that We are as individuals.
Right.
Each one of us has different ones that are holding us back.
That's right. That's right. And we have great potentials, and we refuse to believe that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how much television you watch. Most of the folks that I have on the program don't watch any or watch a little. They don't watch the news. Most people do not. And I, ironically, working for news talk stations for the better part of my career, I try not to tune into what's going on. But I have a vague idea of what's happening. But I've come to the conclusion that I really don't need to be listening to this, because if you take each of those stories, whatever they are,
mm-hmm.
and you change the date, the names of the individuals, and the location, they've been happening for centuries as far as man is concerned. So why do I need to know that these are going on? Because I know they're going on. I mean, I have the awareness that we haven't learned yet. I mean, I hope we're getting there.
I think that there's a shift, and I think things like the Enneagram and the true beginnings of spiral dynamics that Claire Graves brought into knowledge and wrote about, Ken Wilber brings some really encouraging kinds of things that we are moving into higher consciousness. And I know that's kind of a freak out term.
A lot of people are using it.
But if that's really true, then the people who are in those higher consciousness places and attending to things and paying attention and noticing actually pull up the rest of the population slowly but surely. But if there's nobody up there, then it's almost like the muck pulls down. So
yeah.
I do think that there's a shift, and it's gradual, and it's going to take time, but it's very encouraging.
Yeah.
To see and understand that there are people who are changing. There are people who are looking with new eyes.
But everybody still has free will to choose to rise or fall or stay where they are. I mean, that's always been the case as far as our understanding goes, that
right.
we all have always had the choice to go whatever direction that we want. There are two analogies, as you shared that came to mind. One was that of the lobster pot. And that, or crab, whatever you want, and that the way in which they cook the lobsters, they put them in and then they start the heat up. They don't put them in the hot water. And the crabs will start to climb up over each one another to work their way up to the top to try to get out. But there's always one behind that's going to pull them back down.
Oh, wow.
And that's kind of what's going on, is that people are really having a difficult time because they keep getting pulled down by these people who are just creating all kinds of havoc in their lives, and they can't escape it.
I think the other thing, if I can talk a little bit about, we're probably our own worst enemy in some of that, because good psychology tells us that we have an awful lot of our personalities, our routines, our defenses set very early in life. So we're almost like our own crab pulling ourselves back down. What kept us safe as children gets in our way now.
Yeah.
And even when we look at the Enneagram and it shows us what our higher aspects are, we overdo them. It's sort of like speaking more loudly to somebody who speaks a different language. It doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But we do it anyway.
Yeah.
And so we keep locked into these routines, habits, until we find out we don't have to.
Yeah.
We think about things the same way. We respond to things the same way until we pay attention and kind of slap ourselves on the forehead like for a V8 and say, I could do something different here.
Yeah. I know that when I take a look back at my growing up, childhood years, especially in school, and the conversations that I've had with my parents over my experiences, that all they could do was sit back and watch, because there's only so much that a parent can do to protect a child. I mean, they can only go so far. What are they going to do? Either A, put you into armor, or B, never let you out of the house. Well, neither is a viable form of protection of protecting one the child. The child has to go out into the world and experience it. And yet the parents have to kind of sit there and chew on their fingernails and increase the acid flow in their stomachs as their children go out there and are done to whatever's going to happen to them. They can only do the best that they can, and there's no fault to the parent.
Well,
but the child is gathering this stuff,
right?
That now when they get into the double digit years and into the adulthood, now they got to deal with.
Right, and I'm not trying to give parents a bad rap.
And that was the other thing, is that it used to be, what was it, in the 80s, the codependency phase that we were going through, where people were blaming their parents. This is your fault, Mom,
right,
that I'm this way.
Right.
When in reality, it wasn't their fault. They did the best they could with what they knew.
Right. And they were also raised by parents that were doing the best they could.
Exactly.
With really incomplete information. We all have incomplete information. So at some point, and I think some of what I'm going to talk about this Saturday, which of course is long gone when when this airs, but is that part of the second half of life of accepting what has happened, and now it's my responsibility. Mm-hmm. What I do from now on is mine. And it's not my parents, and it's not anybody else's responsibility, and really bringing ourselves back inside of ourselves, which is, I think, the second half of life task, is to be present inside of me.
Yeah.
And then I think there's the third half of life, but that causes mathematicians to go crazy.
I shared that with you when we talked. I said, well, I just turned 50 and I'm hoping to live to 100 or more. If this is the second, and the second half and all this, and we'll talk more about that as we continue. We're talking with Catherine Grant, the Enneagram Master. She is a teacher of the Enneagram, mm-hmm. and you can reach her via email. Her email address is Catherine, that's Katherin, the number 7, Grant, Grant, at gmail.com. A website that you can go to for further information is nc-iea.org, nc-iea.org. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we will be right back. Professional glassblower and craftsman Saul Alcaraz of Santa Barbara Art Glass can design and create a custom piece for you, your home, or your business. And here's all you need to do.
All I need to know is the colors of your house. I'll take it from there. I can make your salad bowl, your plates, your drinking glasses, your wine glasses, your pitcher, cups, and a chandelier to finish it up. And they will look really beautiful on your table. And obviously, we gotta have the right sizes. Send me the metalwork, the hardware, where it's gonna sit. I mean, I have dedicated thousands and thousands of hours. I've been playing with the glass for 21 years. I specialize in antiques. That's my forte.
Can people come by the shop unexpected?
I like it when they come in unexpected, and they'll probably bring some good energy in. Our studio, it's at 706 East Mason Street, two blocks from Miltos in Santa Barbara.
How do people get a hold of you?
Check out my website, sbrglass.com, or call us at 805-965-1541.
Remember the stories your family used to tell?
July got married, 1913, when my father and my uncle came from Italy.
When was the last time you listened to the songs of your youth?
Well, close.
Very swinging sound here in the Bilhart Underground. That's Wild Things.
Want to hear those voices and music again? Fast Forward can help. Fast Forward Audio Communications can transfer your records and tapes to CD so you can hear them again for the first time.
Okay, stand by. They want to get you a man's load right now until the go, no go. Stand by.
You're listening to a live transmission of the voice of astronaut Walter Chirac.
Those memories are priceless and are great to hand down to the next generation. Keep those memories alive. Call 805-708-9804.
That's the freshest thing that I ever heard.
Fast Forward. It's the right direction for preserving your family memories. Just call 805-708-9804.
Welcome Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, and we are heading into a new sign as we talk with our astronomical and astrological assignment editor, Beth McDonald. And Beth, I made a little faux pas last time we talked, last week, because I made the false statement that Aquarius is a water sign. And I think most people make that mistake because of the fact that it is, as you said, the water bearer, but it is not the water sign.
Right. That is one of the most common misconceptions, I think, in Western astrology.
I don't feel so bad.
We all do that. No. It happens all the time. Aquarius is an air sign. His constellation is the water bearer.
And this may
be too much information, but here's my understanding of how that works.
Okay.
Water rules emotions. And air, the element of air, in astrology, rules the intellect, the mind, the thinking. And your intellect, in this Aquarius being the water bearer, is the intellect that contains your emotions. It's about how, you know, you're supposed to have the emotions, but it takes a strong mind to not be a completely emotional being all the time. You have to cultivate your mind to harness the emotions, to use them for the higher good of yourself and others.
Now, with this transition that we just went through, going through December and into 2013 and so forth, and people have been talking about this, I'm curious as to your awareness of any, I don't know if the word amplification or what have you, of the characteristics of Aquarius or any of the other signs. Has made its presence known in some of the folks that you've been speaking with? Has that made any difference, or is it all still pretty much the same, but the transformation continues regardless?
Well, to a certain degree, the universe evolves. You know, everything's moving forward, whether we help or not,
whether we resist or not.
Mm-hmm. There is a series of transits now and for the next 2 years, mainly involving Pluto and Saturn, that are kind of giving us less wiggle room. You know, there's just things we have to face now. There's things we have to, if we want to remain, our degree of comfort and peace is connected in a lot of ways to our levels of responsiveness.
Right.
You know, if we resist, we often make things more difficult for ourselves, and that's more true than ever right now.
Right.
As for how this connects to Aquarius, you know, Aquarius rules science.
Yeah.
It rules... when I was first studying this, the gal who was teaching used to always talk about Aquarius... Think of Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know, the TV show. Yeah. It's like how science fiction becomes science fact.
And I'm going to hold you right there because we're going to have you on in two weeks to talk further about
this. We'll talk more about Aquarius then, but it's all about the science.
And next week on Tell Me Your Story. Stay tuned.
The Chari Center of Health with Deepak and Rupa Chari bringing you this health tip.
Here's today's Chari Center of Health quick tip for weight loss. Make a commitment today to make good health and body fitness a priority in your life. Health is a priceless gift and is wealth. We are committed to enhancing your health. Start the day right and eat breakfast. Your mom was right. A good healthy breakfast gets your metabolism kicked off for the day. Eating breakfast is good for weight loss. In fact, people who eat breakfast are more likely to maintain a healthy weight. People falsely believe that skipping breakfast is a strategy for losing weight, but that's not true. The body needs to be refueled a few times each day, starting with breakfast. When you skip breakfast, you are more likely to become tired because your brain and body run low on fuel. Studies have shown that children who eat breakfast actually do better in school. Of course, the same logic applies to adults, since you both feel better and perform better at work.
Making a healthy breakfast, what should you eat? Ideally, a healthy breakfast should contain both protein and fiber. Protein can come from eggs or beans. Fiber can be found in whole grains, vegetables, and fruits. A good example of a healthy breakfast might be something simple, like a hard-boiled egg, an apple, and a bowl of oatmeal with a little cinnamon, or a whole grain cereal made with water. Avoid sugary cereals, syrups, pastries, and white breads because they are digested quickly, raise your blood sugar, cause weight gain, and will leave you feeling hungry and tired in a couple of hours. Whereas protein and fiber satisfy your hunger and will keep you feeling full until lunchtime. Be good to yourself and know that eating a healthy breakfast is the best way to start off your day.
Take your health to the next level for the new year. Go to charicenter.com. That's charicenter.com. Or call 805-963-1111. That's 805-963-1111.
Tell me your story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're here to understand why we're here and to understand why we are the way we are so that we can, in a funny way, be more than we are today. We are trying to, Catherine Grant, we're trying to sort of self-evolve.
I think so. We have everything we need, really.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been told otherwise, and society kind of tells us that they do things to us. And we were just talking a little bit ago about parents and how we tend to blame parents or blame schools. And that's okay when you're six, but when you're 60, you ought to be able to take responsibility. And we even have language that talks about, that person made me mad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in actuality, it's not possible. If you are getting angry, it's because you are getting angry. And then you need to deal with that. So the Enneagram is one very, very powerful tool to really relocate ourselves inside of ourselves.
It's kind of interesting. I remember when I was going through, I went through LifeSpring in 1981.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through, I think, the two or three levels. And it was a great experience. I had some very extraordinary spin-off experiences mm-hmm. from the actual program that I look back on and they were wonderful. I wouldn't trade them for the world. But when I went through Omega Vector in the 90s with my first wife, the first time I went with her because she was totally blind and she needed somebody to guide her around and so forth. So I became involved only because, I'm not participating. I'm here with her. She's participating. And that doesn't work that way. If you're in the room, you get to play.
Right.
You are going to play. And as I was looking around the room and going through the days and then the next program and the days, I thought, God, when are we going to get it? And it wasn't until not too long ago, or I should say not long after I had started those programs, and we're talking long ago as far as years, it hit me. Not them, me.
Me.
When am
right.
I going to get it?
Right.
Because I kept going back.
Mm-hmm.
But there was more to it. It was, and again, wonderful experience. Is there a point at which, whether we use the Enneagram or some other modality, that we are able to work through all of the layers and sort of be clean as the day we were born? Is there ever that possibility?
Oh, wow.
Are there people out there who are that clean?
Well, I think there are people out there who are that evolved or that clean, if you like that word better, once in a while. And
so it's a phase in and out of that space?
Right.
Okay.
And it may be that people with enough practice and enough noticing, oh, here I am, I'm present, I'm in my body, I'm breathing, nothing's bugging me, I'm all the way inside of here. And you can stretch that a little bit. So it's not just a few seconds, it's actually a whole minute.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible that somebody could totally live like that forever. I don't know anybody, but I do know that people have those moments. And once you do, you can do it again and you can replicate it. And so when something comes at you, you've got a memory. It's like muscle memory, only this is like presence memory. And you can get back inside your body and handle the situation differently.
Process this as far as the Enneagram is concerned. I was sharing with a friend, or they were sharing with me some stuff that was going on, and that they really weren't happy. And so, and I consider this sort of my first seminar of one that I was doing with this one person. But they said they weren't really happy. So I thought, based upon all my experience, I thought, okay, let me ask you, go back in your history and find a place where you remember being happy. Just find that place, okay? And then I want you to bring that feeling forward. Bring the event, if you need to, bring it all forward and feel that. And if you feel like smiling, smile, you know, or laughing, whatever the case may be. But that you were happy. And I said, okay, here's what I want you to do. Every time you start feeling that depressed or sad or whatever that melancholy feeling is that you don't like, okay, and you know when you're there because you can feel it, I want you to hook that memory of that moment back in, even if it was your childhood, and bring it forward. And just keep doing that every time. Just try to remember. Even if they carry a little business card size something that reminds you, I want to be happy. Remember the date, the time, the birthday party, the whatever it was. Is that's not really, though, dealing with the reason for the sadness, the depression, the down, the melancholy.
Right.
Is that just covering it over?
Well, I think that technique is actually a sound psychological technique of, ooh. I know, that'll
I'm
scare
shocked.
You. active visualization, putting that active imagination and training yourself. The flip side of it is that sometimes sadness is a good thing.
Right. And
so there's this idea of let's be where we are.
That's important.
And then make a decision. Shall I just process this internally that things are not good inside of here until they get better?
Yeah.
Now, part of active visualization like that helps move that along. Does it escape? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think anything we do too much of,
yeah,
probably is covering something over. I'm sure all the psychologists out there are screaming around, running around in the room, and their hands are up. But there are different therapeutic techniques. And one of the, again, I'm going to come back to the Enneagram. One of the things that's powerful about the Enneagram is it locates you in a powerful place for yourself. And then you can start to take this little map. Where else are my potentials? Where else are my pitfalls? And part of the process is you have to say, oh, I do that garbage too. Mm-hmm. So if I do the garbage, maybe I can also access the higher qualities. And it's a very conscious sort of thing, but it's very relaxed. People get kind of like, oh, I'm just going to go out and work really hard at this. Well, you know, good luck with that.
I get the sense that, you know, we're all trying to, again, self-evolve is the term I'm going to use here, because we may not be 100% unhappy where we are, but we would like to be somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And we're working towards that, whether it's in our careers, in our families, in our personal life, as far as doing more of the fun stuff that we really enjoy. Mm-hmm. But there was a great line from a book I read, good grief, 30 years ago, that basically stated that I could show you a bunch of people who are happy all the time, but we lock them up.
That's right. That's right.
So you need a balance.
Right.
And it's like you said before, the sadness and all of the other emotions, mm-hmm. we need those.
Right.
We need
and they're
those
very valid.
Yeah.
I have a friend who uses the analogy of when she notices something about herself, she invites that in and has tea. Come in and have a cup of tea and let's talk about, you know, my internal process. Have a cup of tea with myself. Yeah. Why am I envious about this? Or what is the pain part of this? Or what's going on?
Well, what about if you're with a partner and you love this person dearly, mm-hmm. and you you know, in a relationship, as you become more intimate, even on a verbal level, sharing deeper things about yourself, mm-hmm. there are certain things that I'm sure even you in a relationship, you really don't feel like you need to be sharing that little piece of yourself mm-hmm. with this person. It's not that you're intentionally trying to hide from them, but it's like, don't we as individuals need, not so much want, but need to keep certain things to ourselves? Or should we be as exposed to the other person as is possible?
Well, I think there's a big safety issue there. And certainly with your spouse, you would think that there would be no safety issue. But it's not just dumping or exposing everything.
Right.
The real communication, the real relating, the I-thou relationship where you can hear her and she can hear you.
Yeah.
And then if something comes up and you say, well, Richard, let me think. Should I? No, not yet. That's perfectly valid. But to be in those kinds of relationships takes work. And it takes respect for the other person and not trying to fix them, you know?
Well, for a guy, that's a real problem because
yeah.
that's all we try
yeah.
to do. I've actually learned a great deal from my wife, my present wife, in not doing that.
Yeah.
I've gotten better in addition to the other element of the issue of tone, vocal tone.
Right.
Just listen.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is I will sit and listen and she'll say something expecting a response, but I'm listening. Well, what do I say?
I have a phrase for you.
Okay.
I have a phrase. Actually, this came from my daughter, who is wise way beyond her years.
Yeah.
But when we'll be sharing something, we either say this before or try to remember to say it after. And it's very simple. Did you just need for me to hear that? Or would you like a response?
Yeah.
And so if I've told her some big trauma in my life and she says, did you just need for me to hear that or would you like my response?
Okay.
Then it's up to me. I can say to her, no, I just needed for you to hear it.
Right.
Or yes, please give me some feedback.
Yeah.
And in those kinds of relationships, I mean, a therapeutic relationship is entirely different, but with our close friends and intimates, you know, remembering that idea can be very, very valuable because maybe your wife says, yeah, tell me, I
uh-huh.
need some feedback here.
Yeah.
The hard thing is when you have all the feedback and she said, no, I just need for you to hear. And then you kind of have to go and hold yourself.
Yeah.
But it's a wonderful, wonderful technique between people who are in a safe,
yeah.
mutual relationship like that.
There's a line from the Bible, speaking of Mary, the mother of Jesus. It refers to her observing, and mm-hmm. the phrase is pondering those things in her heart.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I tend to do, is mm-hmm. I just, not so much with what I'm told, but just with what's going on within me. I'm trying to observe myself,
right.
and I just ponder them within myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not necessarily trying to figure them out per se, as much as observe and just see what they are.
Yeah.
Not trying to process them. Just, what is that? Oh, that's interesting. What is that?
Right, right.
You know?
And that's just great self-awareness and good
but
consciousness.
But that's not necessarily something that I feel compelled to put out there.
Right.
Is there anything, again?
There are no rules about that. None that I know of.
Right.
And I make up all the rules.
I can or can't. So. I can share it. I don't have to
right.
share it.
Right, right. And it may come a point where it's so big
yeah.
that you can't help but share it.
Yeah.
And maybe not. But you know that too much pondering causes baldness.
Oh, I've gone too far.
That's right. That's right.
Catherine Grant's my guest. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Catherine, before we run out of time, we still have a few minutes left. Who is Catherine Grant?
Wow. I have to believe that the best answer for that is a person who is very much trying to stay inside here, being self-aware, being aware of my interactions with other people, and trying to do no harm.
And what do you hope to or want to achieve with the work you're doing?
I'm hoping that people will find themselves, will realize their potentials.
People traveled the country in the 60s to find themselves.
That's right. Well,
remember?
It's a little different. But to begin to understand the magnificence of who they are,
yeah,
and do the work, do the relaxation, be open to something bigger and better that's already there. You don't have to go find it. It's already there.
I wonder if there's another word we can use other than work, because a lot of people, they don't want to do the work, because
yeah,
the word work implies that this is going to be hard and difficult and tedious and painful. Does it have to be any of those or all of those?
If you're a seven, it is, because we avoid pain. But I think there may be a seriousness about it that I think is necessary.
Okay.
You can't learn everything about yourself, whether it's through Enneagram or EST or MBTI or anything else, in a couple hours or a couple years. That this is a path, and the path needs to be followed. And sometimes you have to cut the weeds. And
yeah.
But that you have a seriousness about it, that commitment maybe mm-hmm. would be a good word.
Okay. It seems to me that we as a species, and we're the only ones that are doing this, because I don't know of any other, and I hate to use the phrase lower species, but other species.
Our fellow species.
Fellow, who are trying to get through these things mm-hmm. because they don't put them on in the first place. You know, I don't know that my dog or my cats or the chickens or any other animals that roam the mountains are dealing with issues that they got in childhood. Many of them are lucky to have gotten through childhood without
That's
being
right.
consumed by
yes.
other species. But we seem to be the only ones who are working through these kinds of things. And so we're working on that self-evolvement in addition to going to school to educate ourselves, to pursue a particular career, to socialize ourselves with the rest of the world, to find a partner to spend time with for as long as we choose to or can, and so forth. Is it your perspective or even contention that because I remember hearing somebody say that behavior modification doesn't work, that we're a product of our environment, and that you can't change someone's behavior. And I took issue with that because I said, well, if that's the case, then education is a waste of time, because education is behavior modification. Because the more information, even though it's intellectual, that you take in, it changes your perspective of yourself and the world, and now you're going to behave a little differently because you have this additional information. The world isn't flat anymore, and we can prove it. Not just mathematically, but we can send cameras out and take a snapshot.
Well, when behavior modification was like the technique du jour, mm-hmm. there was a phrase that said the person that holds the M&Ms rules the world because it's a reward and punishment, and more reward,
right.
you know, for good behavior. And so you're modifying behaviors. It can be very strong.
Right.
But it's pretty simplistic. And I think we as evolving people, yes, we can change our behaviors. But what is much more important is coming inside of ourselves and saying, why am I doing this?
Right.
Change my motivation. Look at my motivation. What's going on here that I do this or I do that or I drink too much or eat too much or whatever it is?
Mm-hmm.
Why? What's underneath it? And that's the real key
yeah.
to long-term change.
Yeah. It's very interesting to me. All of this is so intriguing to me. I have I wish I had them in bookshelves. I have three or four large plastic containers of books on these kinds of subjects. Mm-hmm. That are sitting below the house that I live in storage. And it's just astounding how I've collected these things. And yet I bet you if I go through them, what I'll find is that some of these books, which go back to the 80s and 90s, mm-hmm. are not invalid, but we've discovered so much more since then.
Right, right.
And so someone said, well, why don't you get rid of them? You know, well, I'm certainly not going to throw them away. I would rather give them to a library or sell them to a bookstore, a used bookstore, to then sell to others.
Right.
Because there are other people who are still at those levels of the 1980s, 1990s. They're not in the 21st century yet, say, psychologically or emotionally, right. and those kinds of things. And that's another perspective. I'm curious. Does it matter where you are as far as the Enneagram is concerned? Enneagram?
Does it matter where you are?
Does it matter where you are?
Oh, in terms of developmental?
Exactly.
No. As a matter of fact, we actually see that the Enneagram can be quite leveled. So there are people on higher levels that are accessing more of the higher aspects of their type. And then there are people who are quite accessing lower levels in abundance.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even look like they would be the same type. So it does apply to a variety of what we call healthy functioning or unhealthy functioning. So people can find themselves. And the Enneagram itself is changing. When it first was started to be written down, certain assumptions were made. And we're finding that those assumptions are no longer accurate, right. because it's being taught more widely, other people are bringing it in, more psychological studies are coming in. So the more recent books actually have a different feel to them than the very early books.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I still remember reading the books on codependency, mm-hmm. which was a really big deal back in the mid-late 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
And we continued the shift out of that to interdependency. I mean, that's how things are. It's just we are interdependent.
Right. And so many people are still so codependent.
Exactly, exactly. My guest, Catherine Grant, she is I've referred to her as the Enneagram Master. You're a teacher of the Enneagram.
Yes.
And pardon me, people can get a hold of you through Catherine 7 Grant. And let me verify that. That is correct. Katherin, the number 7, Grant, Grant, at gmail.com. And as we often do on this program, we are going to end the program here, and then we're going to do what we call an afterview. So we're going to do another few minutes.
Okay.
Because what we're going to do is we're going to pinpoint the 9 personality types or the elements of the Enneagram here on Tell Me Your Story. So you're going to have to go to richarddugan.com, go to the radio show's page, go to the radio interview, and listen to the extra portion of this program. I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much, Richard, for having me here.
And
thank you.
I look forward to having you back in town again to talk further about this.
Great. I'd love it.
You bet. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And until next Saturday at this time, love Talal.
You have a message that others can benefit from. A meditation to share. A talk to give that you want heard by more than just those present. A workshop, seminar, presentation with speakers whose information, insight, and inspiration can help others to break through to their highest potential and purpose. Making a quality recording is the first step to making it available, and Fast Forward is the right direction. They'll bring the recording studio to you. Your message is important. It needs to be recorded by professionals who share your passion and want to provide quality recording to those who want and need to hear it. Call 805-708-9804 to take that first step. 805-708-9804. Call Fast Forward for all your recording needs on location and in studio. 805-708-9804.